Micah?
I'm here.
Yeah, right now. Apparently they do have wireless inside caves.
It sounds cold there.
It is. It's a little chilly. But made it through the other side of Hurricane Sandor. Didn't have to deal with being stuck with any pointy ends, thankfully.
How are you feeling?
I'm doing all right. You know, I'm unkempt, unshaven. Haven't showered in a couple days. But,
hey, me too.
That's life, you know? I mean, it's not really different than any other week. So aside from the water and wind, doing just fine.
You can only see me right now.
God. So you're in a cave in a mountain?
Pretty much. I'm in the office of my house, and I've got literally three different kinds of drinks in front of me. I have one Gatorade, I have one coffee with creamer, and I have one mug from the Hogshead in Orlando filled with water from 3 days ago.
Here's a listener challenge. I wonder what our listeners have as drinks beside them when they're listening.
Yeah, that's true.
Just send us that on Twitter or whatever.
Actually, what you don't know is if you mix all that together, Zach, you get milk of a poppy.
Oh, there you go.
That's what I've been looking forward to.
They used Gatorade even back then.
Back then, we just called it Gatorade.
I don't know what that means.
I love that commercial.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So this is Wednesday. This is Game of Bones, a podcast that sometimes you listen to. And, well, there's some things going around. The tweets we talked about online recently that we've got a special thing happening next week that we're all looking forward to.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Sir Christian Nairn has been knighted by us and all of the free peoples in the land. And he will be joining us next week on the program.
Yay!
Oh, no.
The question I want to ask him the most out of anything is, how lucky does he feel that all he has to do is come to work and say one word whole time?
That's awesome.
He makes bank off of it.
I have several questions relating to that, such as, do you find it hard to memorize lines for the show? I won't spoil them all.
I think each Hodor has a different inflection, though. You know,
you can't just say
Hodor every time. I mean, even we can, you know, even if we went around and tried to say Hodor different ways, I don't think we could capture the essence that he does.
No, he does it quite well. There's no doubting that, which is why I'm looking extremely forward to meeting him. My gosh.
We're looking forward to all the crazy questions I'm sure you guys will put together for this guy, too. It should be a good time. And yes, mm-hmm. for the record, he very, very brilliantly portrays Hodor on screen for the HBO series. And yeah, we're pumped. We're excited.
So in addition to the details which are posted on the website, Zach did mention we are sourcing questions from the listeners. So if you can, you know, hear this, certainly send us your questions, you know, to our normal channels, either through Twitter or our email, which usually we say at the end of the show. But I'll say it right now. It's contact@gameofbones.com. And send us your questions for Christian, and we will be sure to ask him. And hey, the worst he does is answer with a Hodor. Wouldn't you be happy that you got a Hodor directly to you?
I saw Ronnie do that in the debates, and I was like, well played, sir. That's like very well done.
The best way to avoid a question is slip into character.
He does it. Why the hell not?
Well, I was going to say, we're doing background checks as well, so if you submit a question, but for whatever reason, gave us less than a 5-star review on iTunes. We select your question.
Yeah, we're holding it all at ransom. That's what's going to happen. You get 2 threats this week, everybody. Actually, you'll probably get one on Friday, depending on whether or not.
Maybe you'll get one later in this episode, depending on how much I keep drinking.
Mike is in a cave staying warm with some honeybrew mead, some Alto wine from the Skyrim universe. And we're sitting warmly and fondly inside of our homes. Again, talking about another chapter from the first book of Game of Thrones.
Yes, and this is the episode. This is the chapter where Bronn actually, where the battle at the Eyrie takes place.
Yes. I've been looking forward to this.
Really? Because you know what? I didn't think like. Oh, no one's speaking.
No, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. You keep cutting out.
Because we're listening. So captivated by what you were saying.
What's
we were
going
sobered
on?
By what you were saying.
You brought
sure
us
you
all back to reality.
No one was interrupting. What was I going to say? I was not looking forward to this chapter because I thought it ran really long. Like I loved it the first time when I saw it, and I even loved it the first time when I was writing it. But this is one of the things that are hard to read back because it's so much fighting and it's so long-winded. And I found myself sort of being like, okay, so Bronn was fighting what's his face, and I like skipped 3 pages. He was still fighting what's his face. I was like, oh my god, it just kept going.
The TV definitely dishes the blow easier and faster. It meant a lot to me from the book's perspective, because right when we go into the chapter, we have sort of an aside by Catelyn in her mind, and she's thinking about this long history about the Vale and all these peoples, about Alyssa Aran. And it's so interesting to me. I think about the world that we actually live in and how long empires, or how long a kingdom per se, has ever lasted. And she's talking about this woman that was alive 6,000 years ago. So you've got this just massive amount of scale. And inside of that same place that's got so much aged wisdom and it's been existing for so long, we have something so silly happening. We have this child man king thing dictating this ridiculous fight. And it's just it brings to light how ridiculous this whole situation is.
Yeah.
And I think, Selena, you brought up the point. There's a lot of infighting going on, too. I mean, you look at... Sir Brendan Tully decides that he's packing up his bags and leaving and going back to River Run because of the way Lysa's behaving. And there's just a lot of infighting amongst this family. You can tell they don't really get along very well with each other, though Catelyn seems to be overly concerned for Robert.
Yeah, it's just, I think that's a motherly thing. Like, you know, she wishes her sister were more sane, because she would have raised a stronger kid, essentially.
But I wonder, what is it, just what happened to John Aran that sort of driven Lysa to be the way that she is?
No. She's crazier than Shithouse Rat. Like, that girl's got some damage. Like, that's just not, you know.
Is it the altitude? I mean, do they not get enough air up
yeah,
there?
It's probably, reduced oxygen. Yeah. It's harder to do insanity when you're visiting Colorado, people. No, it's that's so much true. There's a part in the text where she's sort of speaking aloud about what was allowed. The boy is utterly without discipline. He'll never be strong enough to rule unless he is taken away from his mother for a time. And then Maester Coleman, who is the maester there, leans in and he's like, and he's a little drunk because they've been celebrating, because hell, it's a fight. Nothing happens up here. He leans in. He's like, his lord father agreed with you. Oh, wait, I shouldn't have said that. You know what I mean? Like, everyone knows that Robert's a little, like, he's a scamp.
Yeah. And so, but then you start to realize that not everybody was on the same page. And it's clear that information is not being passed along through the right channels, but not the same information. It's all kind of mixed up. Like, one is saying that he should have been fostered by Stannis Baratheon. The other saying, no, he's supposed to be fostered by Robert Baratheon. And, you know, it seems like something is in the works here that maybe we don't know about. Some plans that were being construed that maybe would have resulted in something different happening.
Well, yeah, because there is that bit where she's basically saying, oh, he was supposed to go here, not here, to Casterly Rock instead of Dragonstone. And the maester's like, well, actually, John wanted him, and then he gets interrupted. So, yeah, there's obviously some shit happening that we don't know about.
Yeah, you're right. Casterly Rock, not Robert Baratheon. Must be the cave air in here.
Well, still,
yeah.
we see that Lysa Aran really has her own agenda, and I guess it said her moods changed hourly, like her orders based on her moods, and her moods changed hourly. And Catelyn discovers this when she tries to talk with her sister before the fight, you know, for his trial, for Tyrion's trial. And we actually learned what I thought was interesting was that she initially advised Lysa to hear Tyrion, whatever Tyrion had to say, in private, which would have changed things dramatically from when he, asked for trial by combat. I guess it was Catelyn's initial reaction was that Lannister would use the public, the wide room of people, to create a scene. And I think that instinct was exactly right, because that ended up being what saved Tyrion, you know, his slow logic, his mockery of the court. And that really endeared everybody to him, including Bronn, who ended up stepping in for him.
Honestly, though, I think Catelyn is also really falling back on her accusations on Tyrion. I honestly think that she just does not believe at this point that he has done this that she's accusing him of, and the more quiet she can get rid of the problem, not get rid of Tyrion, but sort of smooth over the problem, I think the better for her, because she realizes she's made this huge mistake.
It's almost like she has that realization, and she realizes that I'm in pretty deep shit here, and my sister, who's this, what do you refer to her as, Eric?
Crazier than a shithouse rat.
There you go.
Yeah, what you just said, you know, and she's basically, it's gone from, as Selena, you pointed out, Catelyn being really sort of gung-ho about, you know, trying Tyrion for his crimes. She starts to defend him, and it's Lysa who really wants to make a Lannister pay because she believes that now he's the one that's responsible for what happened to Jon Arryn, and that he's the one responsible for her son being fatherless, and she wants to see him pay. And, you know, now you're in, despite Tyrion being Catelyn's captive or prisoner, it's still in Lysa's home and up to her discretion at the end of the day. I mean, Catelyn's just one person. She's not going to be able to stop something from happening if it does.
Here's an interesting bit, guys. This happened before in this book already. It happened with the Lannisters when the direwolf attacked Joffrey at the stream side, and then it went away. Cersei's only thing that she could do that made any sense was, hell, one wolf did it, so we'll just kill this one to make up for it.
Yeah, yeah. The question is raised, though, where I think it's Catelyn says, I have no doubt that one or all three of the Lannisters had, you know, had Bran attacked, but she doesn't think that it was Tyrion specifically. Whereas her sister feels, or, you know, named Cersei in her letter as being the one, and now is acting as if Tyrion was the one.
It's like the wolf, though, she's replacing it.
It is. That's what it is for Lysa. You know, she's completely, but no, for Lysa, it might be something worse. Like, she might be in such a state of insanity that she really truly believes that Tyrion was the one that killed her husband, which is unfounded.
Yeah.
In fact, he probably was nowhere near King's Landing when Jon Arryn died.
Probably
So stables. She's like realizing she's never going to get the justice for her husband and is therefore taking it out on Tyrion.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's that moment even when Sir Roderick is trying to rationalize with Lysa, saying, you know, poison, that's said to be a woman's weapon. So why would the imp use it, or why would the Kingslayer use it? This is such a freaking hypocritical scene, by the way, too.
It's not really a really enjoyable battle to read either when Bronn, you know, defeats the knight. I think that it was probably better in the TV show because there it was more of a suspense thing. But really, like, when they get down to it and the battle occurs in this chapter, it's really just a matter of Bronn biding his time, kind of like assessing a weakness in the knight and then exploiting it. And it's like the most bare bones style of battle where you just have to find a weakness, and, you know, he cuts him up pretty bad and then he wins. And that's what happens, but it's not at all kind of in a cheery way that we're like cheering or rooting for Bronn. Like, it's bloody and it's, I want to say it's naked, like the way of fighting. And
it's
all the
naked?
While they have these
I missed that.
It's naked. Yeah, yeah. No, it's like when you're killing somebody, you know, you could be riding in a battle, but no, it's just two men standing across the court from one another, and occasionally a little boy is like, make him fly! You know? It's like this really annoying.
We can fly! We can fly!
Yeah.
Think of it this way, guys. When you're starting a game, a video game, like Skyrim, or even the Game of Thrones game, or something,
you know,
like that.
Honestly, Zach, I would feel that this is a Skyrim podcast, by the way you always mention it.
Think about this, though. When you're putting the attributes in your character, you have, on the other side, you have Ser Vardis, and he's obviously been leveled up in his more physical strengths, like strength, for example, and maybe armor, things like that. Whereas you have Bronn, who's been leveled up mainly in only attack, and mainly in intellect, intelligence, cunning, charisma, you know, insert game here. And so you've got a great battle poised with each other where you basically have wit versus strength. You've got a guy with a giant shield and full armor. George goes into very, very vast detail about the lobstered full steel plate armor that he has. And if you guys play these games, you know that shit's expensive. And so, you know, if he's shooting an arrow at him, then he'll, you know, he'll probably glance it off. But he's going into the battle so dressed to the nine, and his mobility is limited, even though he's trained so well in it. And you've got Bronn on the other hand, and basically the whole battle just goes on with Bronn sidestepping and letting this guy become winded until eventually he sort of pulls a Bard from the Hobbit and finds a weakness in the armor and just takes care of it.
But it's not, it's, you see what I'm saying though, it's not pleasant, it's not like, I mean, I think watching on TV is probably more interesting because you're cheering for Bronn, whereas now you're just like, you know, watching this man kill another, it has less of an effect because you're, I guess it's more real.
It's like a card game though, man. It's, you have a certain strategy. You just have two differing strategies. This guy plays this way, this guy plays this way, and it's really interesting for me personally to see how it plays out.
Yeah, okay, I get that.
I agree.
What about how Liza took it, though? She
wasn't happy, obviously.
She wasn't, but she was like, clearly the gods have declared this man innocent.
I didn't see that coming.
He will be given a... I know, I thought she'd fight it tooth and nail. But, like, she just seemed to be, like, shocked, and then she withdrew. It was really, really weird.
Well, she couldn't do anything at that point, because he had won. Like, there were witnesses. I think that she honestly thought that by sending him on his way, he would die on the road. Like, I think she was pretty much sure of it.
That is what is said in the book, too, that even Tyrion thinks that...
Yeah.
Even though he's escaped this... present danger, the fact that he's still gotta get through the surrounding area when he's leaving
In this chapter as well. I wanted to ask you guys, we obviously had Catelyn's memories of when Peter when he fought for her back in wherever it was, and and I thought it was interesting the description of that, how he really didn't back down. I mean, I always see Littlefinger as this kind of cowardly sort of person that goes through all these things to avoid confrontation. But I mean, he was ready to die for the love of Catelyn, which I thought was pretty interesting.
It goes back to the attributes. He was dealt a certain hand, being intelligence and things like that, and he tried to go up against someone using a method that he wasn't suited for, and he failed.
I think, too, like, speaking of Peter, like, we're meant to believe that people don't necessarily change. Like, I think he's still going to be that fierce, but he's found, like you said, Zach, he's found a way to be that fierce, but with his intellect.
He's accepted who he is, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So he is still that... stubborn or that, you know, valiant, but he has to do it in more of an unnoticeable secret way because brute force will crush him. So that's why he has a network similar to Varys.
I wanted to ask Selena, though, and, you know, maybe some people listening out there who have read further in the series, you know, looking at this particular scene and looking at this particular chapter, how crazy is this event in retrospect? Like, having read through the books and now reading this again, knowing what you know, without giving anything away. But how crazy is this scene?
I mean, especially because this is pretty much one of the last moments before everything just goes to hell. Like, the old regime, or the new old new regime, one of the two.
old crowd.
Right, where there is a king and there is a way of doing things. I mean, the fact that she, you know, Lisa Arryn actually puts him on trial, and then when he wins, she lets him go. I mean, this is one of the last quote-unquote civil things that happens before Robert dies and Ned dies, and everyone's vying for the throne and everyone's playing dirty. So yeah, absolutely, and I think definitely it just seems like so much... I mean, obviously, everything in this story matters because everything is life or death for these characters, and we know that any one of them could die at any time. But it just, it's like make much ado about nothing, almost.
That's true. Yeah, I agree. It all puts in perspective because you've got formalities and all of these things. It's kind of like, you know, I'm thinking about a revolution or something where you live in this world with all of these social cues and norms, but if shit goes to crap... If people say that sometimes,
if
shit goes to crap, then
it all goes to hell.
Exactly. Then people are just going to revert to whatever methods they see fit, and to hell all with the way things are supposed to be. To hell all with methodology and honor. You know.
Now, like you were saying before, she's essentially put Tyrion in a worse situation than he was when he was captive at the Eyrie, because he's got to go through the Mountains of the Moon. you know, who knows what Shagga son of Dolph is going to do to him when they meet.
Well, with a name like Shagga, it really leaves little to the imagination.
That's true.
Oh.
Well, that wasn't meant to be quite the deafening, resounding, you know, proclamation. Well, yeah, but
can't wait till Shagga makes it into
I know,
the next couple of
it's
chapters.
It's just so much yeah. awesomeness.
I feel like him and Mord would be a great tag team in the WWE.
Shagga
against the Hardy Boys.
Yeah.
Oh God.
I have a great own this week.
It's, is it good?
It's Catelyn saying about Lisa. The dwarf has played her like a set of pipes, and she is too deaf to hear the tune.
Nice.
I thought it was perfect. So cool.
So Tyrion's just won the battle. It's at the very, very, very end of the chapter, and little Robert says, "Can I make the little man fly now?" And across the garden, Tyrion Lannister got to his feet. "Not this little man," he said. "This little man is going down in the turnip hoist. Thank you very much."
I like that.
I have to give my own of the show to George R. R. Martin. He has a paragraph full of irony, and he totally owns Robert Arryn very, very hard. And he says, "Robert Arryn, Lord of the Eyrie and Defender of the Vale, was fidgeting impatiently in his elevated chair. When are they going to fight?" he asked plaintively.
I like that.
Yeah, so basically, the whole perspective that he was painting was, oh, there's a fight, there's all this stuff, and then he introduces him with all of his titles, you know, and then he says the most bullshit line ever, like, he's the Lord, I have to call this fight to the death, I have to say when they can fight, and he goes, when are they going to fight, you know, while grabbing toward his milk hole. It's just terrible.
Mine yeah. is at the very end of the chapter, too, when Robert says, "Is it over, mother?" the Lord of the Eyrie asked. Suckle, suckle, suckle.
That has to be the title of this episode. Suckle, suckle, suckle.
Wait, I'm not done. No. Suckle, suckle, suckle. Catelyn wanted to tell him, "It's only now beginning."
Oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun,
dun. Oh, we should play the Halloween theme. It's Halloween, actually, today, is it not?
Yeah, it is Halloween.
Happy Halloween, people.
Yeah, I hope you guys wore good costumes. If you had some that were awesome looking, you can shoot them to us on Twitter at Game of Bones. Or
perhaps you dressed up as your favorite goat herdsman.
If it's a more private costume, you can send that to contact@gameofbones.com.
Yeah, Mike, I don't know if you knew this, but I actually dressed up as our 5-star rating on iTunes.
Did you really?
Well, how would somebody go by?
How would one do that?
It was it was pretty simple, actually. I
And if you don't supply us with more stars, Micah will be forced to threaten you to have to see photos of that.
Yeah. Which is pretty much worse than fishnet.
I don't know, man. Stars, depending on the size, I mean, they're pretty large.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, 5 of them.
Okay, well, we got a comment on a hyperbole on one of our podcast posts last week where I like that. I thought it was funny. Nicole Soar commented saying, "I think Eric's OTP, that's one true pairing for all you non-shippers out there, is himself and Theon. That should have been included in Hyperbole's battleships."
Oh my God, yes.
Battleships,
would have
huh?
won everything. Yeah. Battleships.
That would have been awesome.
Yes.
Well,
I would have voted for it.
It's a special love the two of us share.
Caroline J, a.k.a. CJ7, wrote in. "Accidentally listened to last week's Game of Bones episode backwards and was getting really worried about Selena. I guess she was missing the same amount of time backwards as forwards." Trippy. It must be Halloween.
That's so confusing.
Sorry, that's Halloween sounds.
That's X-Files.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
We need Michael Myers Halloween.
What was that?
Music.
And then it goes, wow, wow, wow.
Also, Brian Deckert wrote in, "My own of the episode was when you read my 5-star review. Please, Micah, don't hurt me."
Nice.
Yeah.
"When do I ever threaten physical violence coming from myself?"
Go back.
Never from
Micah.
Me, always from fictional characters.
That's the kind of scarier kind, because first you have to wonder what kind of tools you have at your disposal and your arsenal if you can bring fictional characters to real world life.
That is true.
Recently on Twitter, Hypable asked, "What is your favorite Hypable podcast?" And guys, we very, very, oh my God, it's just, you know, red cheeks and all, so happily are here to say that you made us blush. about how many tweets you sent our way slash their way. So thanks for giving props to us and all the other shows on Hypeable. It's fun stuff.
Yes. And you can always visit Hypeable for your fandom news. That's hypable.com.
And if you look closely enough, Selena writes a lot of things there.
If you look closely enough on Halloween, Selena just kind of appears through your screen.
Oh my god, yeah. That would be so creepy. It's so
please
true.
Please don't go into the mirror and say Selena three times.
You do not want to do that.
Don't do it.
If you go on Hypeable and you refresh 500 times, then I will appear.
Oh my god. If
that's
you go
a great
to Hypeable,
right,
and you click
right?
500 ads, then I will appear.
You will have pretty much paid for her flight.
My flight to wherever you are.
And in the meantime, you get to see the world from doing that. So,
and just don't forget, Hodor is coming.
Hodor
is coming.